Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Carrie against Dellavedova. Touchdown at three. Looking for Antetokounmpo. See a pass to LeBron. LeBron James looking for the end one. Carrie inside. Ooh. He snuck it in. Derek Williams, a long launch.
Derek Williams dialing long distance with a 9-1-1 call, and the Cavaliers lead by four after three.
When you're playing against a divisional team, it's going to be a tough game. Grind it out. Milwaukee's a young, great team. We always enjoy going against them. It's great competition. But going into the fourth, we close out, got stops when we need it. Our potential is kind of through the roof right now because we can form so many lineups. So it's exciting. We just still got to get used to one another, what to expect, and the trust factor. And once we get that down, I feel like going into the playoffs, we'll be in a good spot.
What does Darren bring?
Automatic leadership. He's ran a franchise, multiple franchises before, so you know he knows how to run a ball club. Playing in big games before, so you know he won't shy away from the moment. He can knock down shots and he can play make. I'll play with him a couple times. Now I've seen the international play, so it's going to help out a lot.
At the end of the day, I just felt like this was the best fit for me. You know, it was a team that showed interest in the offseason of signing me. I know a lot of the guys on this team, you know, playing with Bron in the Olympics, play with Kyle, and he's one of my good friends, and we still talk to this day. I just felt like I'd be comfortable here. I felt like I would have a significant role here, you know, with the need for a backup behind Kyrie. And, of course, competing for a championship, you know, that's something that, you know, I haven't had a chance to do. Definitely helped the pick-and-roll game here, you know, being able to distribute but also score as well, and kind of take some pressure off of Bron having to handle the ball, you know, so much in that second unit.
I've always thought, you know what, put on pads. Remember Chuck Knoll, he was forced to do a mini combine. So he's like, fine, but here's what we're doing. Everybody has to have pads on. And all the DBs and wide receivers had to have their socks rolled down when they walked down the hill, because if you weren't taped, go back up and get taped. You had to be dressed as if we're going to play. We ran our 40-yard dash on grass. And I really think if you're going to do all these drills, put pads on. Or do this. Just go to the Olympic trials. Whoever doesn't make the Olympics, bring them on your football team. Because, I mean, if that's how you're evaluating who's a football player, which anybody that does that is moronic. This is not a football event. It's an athletic event.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Welcome indeed to the extravaganza. Thanks for joining us this afternoon right here on The Ticket, where we are and will always remain Toledo's sports leader. Got a lot of really, really interesting stuff to discuss. You just heard in the montage some of the highlights from the NBA yesterday. Cavaliers did not have Darren Williams yet, but they have him. They had him. He just wasn't in uniform. He will be the next time they take the court. So that was an interesting conversation, a little bit from LeBron, a little bit from Darren Williams as well. And can you believe it's time to start talking about the NFL Combine coming up? Can you believe it's time to start talking about the draft? Can you believe it's time to start talking about free agency? And can you believe that the NFL's, well, perceptually anyway, the NFL's best running back, Adrian Peterson, for the last several years, is an unrestricted free agent after being let loose in a contract move. It's a dollars and cents thing, not a, hey, we don't think he can play anymore thing, by the Minnesota Vikings. Those are some of the things that we're going to be talking about. Some of the other top stories of the day, by the way, in addition to the NBA, as I just mentioned, the Cavs getting Darren Williams and probably going to get Andrew Bogut, and how that will impact the NBA championship race. Another conversation that's going on right now, I thought it was interesting, between Stephen A. Smith and Kellerman on TV. It was actually yesterday, not today, but I didn't get a chance to get to it. I think most observers are suggesting that the MVP race is a two-man race between Russell Westbrook and James Harden, who are both having just unbelievable individual years. The Rockets have the benefit of, well, let me rephrase, Harden would have the benefit of his Rockets team having a better record, a second best seed in the West, or second or third anyway, I should say, in the West, and could end up, you know, being a real threat to somebody. Whereas the Thunder just, you know, kind of middling along 500-ish, and Russell just playing out of his mind. And they debated yesterday between Steven and Max about whether or not LeBron James is being overlooked, that he's the real MVP. And that subject came up because why? Same reason it always comes up. If LeBron misses a game and the Cavs lose, oh, there's the real definition of value. That's most valuable player. And I will once again, and I'll continue to repeat this until I run out of breath, they got to stop with the valuable part being taken so literally. The MVP award has never, in basketball, in football, in the NCAAs, it doesn't matter if it's pro or college, it has never meant, let's define value and how important he is to his team. How many wins is he worth and all that stuff? No. It means player of the year. Bottom line, they don't want to call it player of the year because the player of the year sounds clunky. MVP, we all know. MVP, most valuable player, means player of the year. Who's having the best individual season for his team? Is he contributing to a victory and to more victories than losses? You know, that does matter to an extent. Shouldn't have an MVP from a last place team. But you cannot just say, well, you know, when this guy doesn't play, you know, his team loses more, so therefore he's the most valuable by the definition of valuable. That's, no, stop it. If LeBron James is having a better year than Russell Westbrook, then give him the MVP. If LeBron James is having a better year than James Harden, then give him the MVP. But he's probably not. They are having unbelievable career years. That is what MVP should be. I want to discuss that with you and possibly debate that with you. The Steelers are breaking out the checkbooks. They just made Antonio Brown the highest paid wide receiver in the National Football League, and they're franchise tagging Le'Veon Bell. So they're going to have to pay him the value, the average of the top five running backs in the National Football League. And obviously they're already paying Brown now the most, excuse me, of any wide receiver. And Ben Roethlisberger, of course, is on a massive contract as well as one of the top-paid quarterbacks in the league. They've taken care of their boys, and now they've got to piecemeal their way around those parts in order to try to catch the Patriots and win in the American Football Conference to get back to another Super Bowl. I said Le'Veon, and I almost said LeVar, because he is in the name as well. Le'Veon, LeVar, you can see the L-A-V thing. Yeah, well, anyway, even though Le'Veon is L-E. LeVar Bell. Overbearing parents in the news today, too. We're going to talk about that. Would the outrageous comments of LeVar Ball, did I say Bell? How about that? Le'Veon Bell and LeVar Ball. Would the outrageous comments of LeVar Ball make you think twice about drafting Lonzo Ball, his superstar All-American son, at UCLA? Some comparisons being made nationally. Richard Williams, father of Venus and Serena. Earl Woods, father of Tiger, Marv Marinovich, father of Todd. Some of those worked out well. Some of them did not. What will this guy be? Not only to his kid and to, but to his other two kids, I should say. Speaking of parents, if you are a grown A man and you are a professional athlete and your mom is having to take to Twitter to fight your battles for you, you went wrong somewhere along the way. Shaq and JaVale McGee, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. I've pretty much ignored it over the last few days. But I think it's really worth our conversation. It's a very interesting story, only because Pam McGee, the mother of JaVale McGee, has stepped into the fray and declared that Shaquille O'Neal should be fired from TNT because he is cyberbullying her baby boy. Baby boy, I think, is around 29 years old. Cyberbullying him by making fun of him on TV and on Twitter on his Shacked in a Fool feature. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. Also, we're going to talk a little bit about the stories yesterday, yesterday that we touched on at the very, well, not one at the very beginning. It was actually, in the 3:30 to 4 o'clock segment of the show yesterday about the impact of transgendered students on school sports. I told you yesterday about the female who doesn't like being a female, so wants to become a male, so is taking testosterone treatments, which of course have made her bigger and stronger than all of the other wrestlers that she was wrestling against in the female division, which is where she has to wrestle in Texas, bigger and stronger, and she went 56-0 and won a state championship. And some of the parents of some of the girls that this transgender female wrestler beat, not very happy about that. So we talked about it at some length yesterday. And by the way, I looked up the other one from Alaska because I remember talking about it last summer. And so I pulled that one back up again, and it really is an amazing thing when you think about the dangerous ground that we're on here. If we start allowing boys and girls to decide what gender they feel like and to compete in one another's competitions, and contests, because it's going to wipe out girls' sports. And that, and when you're a boy competing in girls' sports, and you win and you set all these records, you know, you don't really win. And the girls, they have to compete, in unlevel playing circumstances. They don't win. It's a lose-lose situation for everybody. I talked about it, and I pulled it back up again. I'm going to revisit that in the 4 o'clock hour. But parents and teenage girls very, very upset about why biological males were allowed to run against them in a high-profile track and field event last summer, in fact, their state championships. So that's a pretty amazing story in and of itself, and we're going to follow that up because there's a pretty interesting conversation going on our Facebook page, which you can find at 106.5 The Ticket, about this. Because to me, there is a very, very serious threat to girls' athletics if people start blurring the lines between boy and girl, which is what's going on in certain segments of society. So we're going to talk about that in a bit as well. And then, of course, we're going to talk a little bit about the team's local. When I say local, of course, closest to home, north of the state line and east of us, Lions and Tigers, and not any Bears, but Lions and Tigers primarily, and some Pistons, as well as, of course, Browns and Indians and Cavaliers to the east. Spring training games, of course, are well underway. Some good things happening, some questionable things happening in both Florida and in Arizona in the Grapefruit and Cactus Leagues. We're going to get into that. But as I mentioned, the NFL scouting combine is upon us, or is close to upon us, and we've got a little studying to do. Actually, you can't study for these things. I shouldn't say that. But our friend Dennis Maniloff, who is a regular guest on this program, is going to join us at about 3:35, who covers the teams out east of us in Cleveland, put together his annual Wonderlic challenge. And it's not a full 50-question, 12-minute Wonderlic test, but it's an abbreviated version, a half version, 25 questions that you're supposed to get done in roughly 6 minutes without cheating and looking at Google or looking in any other places. And I posted it, and I tweeted it, and I Facebooked it, and I find it very, very interesting. And I'll put it on our Twitter feed here as well, which is Sports Radio 106.5. And I find it very interesting because it's just stuff that makes you think. It's not a lot of recall. Some of it's recall, but a lot of it's figure it out on the go. And this is what college players have to do to prove themselves ready for the NFL, for the mental grind of being a National Football League player. This is what all of the NFL franchises put these guys through, is Wonderlic tests. Jim Cushlin, I sent that link to you, or I told you about it anyway, yeah, earlier today, and asked you to take this so we can discuss it when we have D-Man on coming up here at about 3:35. Mm-hmm. Did you get the test taken?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did. I
you
took
don't sound
it
very
time.
Thrilled about it.
I did a little worse than I actually thought I was going to do. Only about a 75.
75.
Yeah, a little worse. I expected better of myself.
Well, I did too. I got 80, and I thought I was going to get 100 because I started looking at these things. I can figure this out. And now, did you put a stopwatch on yourself, or did you just kind of do it until you were done?
I honestly just kind of did it, but I tried to make sure, because I know there's a technical limit, I tried to make sure I answered everything as quick as possible.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing, though, and I will tell you, when I did it, I kind of said, okay, I can do this in 6 minutes, and I looked up at the clock when I started, and I never looked up again. I just did it until I was done, and I have no idea if I did it in time. And that's why, no matter how you did on it, you can't simulate the stress and the pressure [S2] Right. [S1] Of that ticking clock. Because when these players, you know, these college players have to take this test to see what their mental aptitude is like, you know, it's not really an IQ test, but it's, I guess, as close as you can come to it. When they have to take this test, they are under a 12-minute gun, right, or stopwatch, if you will, and they've got to get it all done. And if you're just sitting there working on one problem and you realize, oh, my God, a minute and a half just went by, that was time for 6 questions, you've got to just go, 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 go. And you didn't do that, and I didn't do that. And so no matter how well we did, and I don't know what an 80% on this little goofy test would translate to into the Wonderlic scoring, because they don't do it by percent.
Right.
They do it by a number. you know, I got a 40.
Yeah.
I got a, well, no, what's the max? I forget. Is it 50? Is 50 the max because there's 50 questions? Is it just by simple number of questions answered correctly? I can't recall exactly how they score the Wonderlic, but I think the highest score ever was like a 49. And then if you get somewhere in the 20s, you're pretty average. They want quarterbacks to be up in the 30s or 40s. I remember Vince Young once infamously got like down in the single digits, like an 8 or 9 or something.
Here we go. 50 is the perfect score. Pack McNulty, you got that 1975. The only player still to have gotten a perfect score on this thing.
I was going to say, I thought I'd seen the highest ever was a 49, but obviously that's not true. Maybe that's of more modern times. I don't know. But you know, for them to do it the way they have to do it is a very, very difficult thing, or different thing, because they got to do it under the time constraints. So, now, and the other thing is, I don't know how, you know, these questions, how close to accurate they are for what the actual Wonderlic test, you know, is. Now, Dennis researches this, and he's been doing this for several years now. He puts out this, you know, this sample Wonderlic test for his readers. He's a newspaper writer to take and to see how they do and then to kind of share it. And that's what I did. And so I'm assuming the style of questions, the types of questions are keeping with the tradition or the template of the actual Wonderlic test. But I'm asking about that. I'm going to ask him about that coming up at about 3:35 or so. And I'd like to see other people do, too. If you, you know what? I'll tell you what. I'm going to take a time out here in about 6 minutes, and I'm going to tweet it from the Sports Radio 106.5 Twitter feed. Just so you can take a look at it for yourself. I'll tweet that link out there. It's from the Cleveland.com paper. That's where he works out of. And I'll let you read that for yourself and see if you can take it and just see how you do, and see what your thought is. And the reason I ask is, and you know, Jim, if you're a scout and you're putting these guys through all of the combine drills and all of the tests, and they test out at 225, benching 225 32 times. Mm-hmm. And if they test out at 4.6 or 4.5 or 4.4, depending on the position, that difference matters, obviously. And all the physical things in there, but they get a 9 on their Wonderlic test. Is it keeping you from drafting them? And conversely, if the dude runs a 5.140 and benches 225 8 times, but scores a 49 on the Wonderlic, you know, it's, hey, great, we got a student here, but is he an athlete? Are you wanting to draft him? And I know you got to take a little bit of everything into consideration, but I'm wondering how much importance that these guys, the talent evaluators, that is, actually place on this one moment in time, 12 minutes of pressure, 12 minutes of get your brain working, try to recall formulas that you may have learned in school. How do you apply logic and common sense to a problem? Because a lot of them, that's what they are. It's not memorization. Not going to ask you necessarily for the capital of Turkey, because you may or may not have ever learned that. So they don't want to see what do you remember. They want to see how fast can you figure stuff out. So that's the kind of you know, the problems that they generally give there. And for 12 minutes in time, you know, did you panic? Did you freak out? Or did you do well? And it can really change, you know, whether or not a team wants you, whether or not you're a guaranteed. A huge signing bonus signer, you know, in the first couple of rounds, or you're just kind of barely hanging on there or late in there. It's amazing how your football talent can just be whittled down at some point, you know, in some fashion to just a little, you know, a little IQ test, which is the closest what we can describe it to being. All right, I guess Jim Cushion walked away. Sorry about that. All right, so anyway, we're going to get you on the phone lines at 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065, to talk about a number of these things, excuse me, including where I started this whole thing in the National Football League, and that is Adrian Peterson being set free, or at least being exposed to other franchises. He is now an unrestricted free agent. They declined the 2017 option for Adrian Peterson. How many miles does he still have left on his tires? You know, presumably a lot. If you recall, he missed the entire 2015 season because he, was suspended on the commissioner's exempt list because of the domestic violence abuse charges against his son, or, you know, for the things that he did to his son. So he kind of had a whole year without playing, a whole year without carries, a whole year without, you know, taking hits on his knees and so on and so forth. You would think that Adrian Peterson is still going to be a pretty, you know, a pretty valuable piece for a lot of teams. And then you look at what he had last year. He only played a short time before he got injured. So you look at, you know, injuries and then the suspension. He's essentially had a couple of years where he's just got no wear and tear on him at all. I wonder what teams would be interested in him. Hint, 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 hint. We're talking about the Detroit Lions, who have been just a disaster in the running game last year. They had no running game to speak of whatsoever. It's not just because of the injury to Amir Abdullah, which of course is huge, but because of the offensive line as well. And there certainly needs to be some upgrades there, and we have to consider that. But if you can get, you know, an all world kind of a guy like Adrian Peterson, especially from a division opponent, you know, you have to do your homework. You're going to have to do a real serious evaluation of his health and see where he is, because he did injure himself very early on September 18th against the Colts, I believe it was. No, he was injured on September 18th, and then he came back on December 18th against the Colts. That's what it was. But then he sat out the final two games because of an abductor strain he suffered in that first game back. So this is a guy who's got a lot of rest over the last 2 years, to say the least. A lot of rest, but he is coming off of an injury, and he isn't going to come cheap. He's going to come cheaper than he would have had he not been injured, that's for sure. But it's something that you would like to see the Lions investigate. So we'll talk about that a little bit, and I may even ask our friend Dennis, who covers the NFL, that question as well. 866-240-1065. Those are some of the topics on the table for discussion today. I want you to get your thoughts in on any and or all of them when the time arises. But we will talk to Maniloff on the other side of this Sports Center, which is coming up directly right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Onward, indeed, we do roll. It is 3:37. Thanks for being with us. Phone lines are going to be open at 866-240-1065. But right now they are occupied by our good friend Dennis Maniloff, sports writer extraordinaire for the Cleveland Plain Dealer, covering the Browns, Indians, Cavaliers, and more out there in the city to the east. He is also the author of From A to Z, Andrews to Zastel, a collection of Plain Dealer sports writer Dennis Maniloff's favorite interviews. D-Man, what's going on, brother? How are you? Hello, Dennis. We don't have Dennis. I don't hear Dennis. Somebody didn't punch Dennis up. Or Dennis is gone. Or Dennis can't hear me. Something is wrong with Dennis. Dennis,
can
you hear me?
I can hear you now. Yes, I did not. I was not able to hear you before.
All right, glad we got you now, my friend. How you been? Good to talk to you.
Good to have you. Good to be on, Bob.
All right, Dennis. I took the little sample Wonderlic test that you threw up there for your listeners. I made Cushlin take the Wonderlic test that you put up there as well. And we've got some questions for you, my good friend. First question is, what's the best way to ask this question? How similar, that might not be the right way. What we're trying to ask is the methodology, the template for the actual Wonderlic test that NFL prospects take when they go to that combine. How does yours compare to it? Did you write your own questions with previous questions on Wonderlic tests in mind as models? In other words, how close is this to the real thing?
I don't think it's that close, Bob, in some areas. I mean, I've done it for 5 years now, and it's pretty popular, so that's why it's become an annual thing.
It's very cool, yeah. I can see why it's popular.
Yeah, I mean, I've used some of the Wonderlics when I researched it. I used some. I've never seen an actual Wonderlic that was taken at the combine, okay? But I can only go by what I've heard, what I've read, some of the questions that I've seen or heard about that came out of the combine Wonderlic. And, you know, you cobble that together with some of the sample tests you see online from Wonderlic itself, and you just get an idea of the type of questions that are asked. And then what I've done with that is taken it and run with it and just created stuff that, you know, I would say some are similar, but basically it's my own little trivia test with time in mind as well.
Okay, and that makes sense too. Now, the actual Wonderlic test, as we know, is a 50-question test that the players have to take and finish in 12 minutes or get as many answered as they can in 12 minutes. And I got to tell you, Dennis, I can't imagine the stress that must put on these young, you know, athletes who want to go into the NFL. Because I took your 25 question, you know, half version of it, without a clock. I mean, I tried to stay within the 6 minutes, as you kind of tell people, just be honest with it. I looked at the clock when I started, but I had to be honest. I never looked back up as I was doing it. I just wanted to answer every question correctly. So I don't know if I took 8 or 9 or 5. I don't know how long I took. So I just wanted to do it. And these guys don't have that luxury. They've got, you know, somebody sitting there with a stopwatch, and you can practically hear the 60 minutes tick, 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 tick going by here as you're trying to work on these answers. That's an awful stressful thing. Did you, do you consider that when you write your questions about how long people are going to spend on a particular question?
There's no question about it. Yes. Bob, that's what makes the Wonderlic fun to me. The questions that I had in there, and I try to do this every year. I don't want to make them impossible. I try to create some different avenues that you have to go down, a little bit of geography, a little bit of math, a little bit of grammar, those type of things. But the key to it is the compressed time frame, and that's what I say in the intro, is that the questions might not be all that difficult in and of themselves, but when you know you have the clock on top of you, it can get interesting. And, yeah, I agree with you. If I'm an NFL prospect, I'm panicking, I guess, is the word. If I have to sit down and pump out, 50 questions in 12 minutes. And here's the thing. You get a couple of those math questions, and all of a sudden, you're struggling with the math maybe, and 15, 20 seconds are ticking by, and you're like, uh-oh, I got to hurry, and I got to get on to the next one. So that's what makes Wonderlic fun to me, is the combination of the questions plus the compressed time frame.
Now, you said you've been doing this for 5 years, and it's pretty popular, which is why you keep doing it. How did you first start it? Why did you do it the first time around?
Well, because I've been hearing the stories about the Wonderlic and about how, certain athletes have excelled at it and others have bombed, and you're saying, okay, what is this test? It was almost shrouded in mystery for a while. Like, what is this test that is so, newsworthy, if you will, at the combine? And so I started doing some research on it. I said, all right, let's just create one on my own. Let's make one of my own sample Wonderlic tests with the NFL Combine Wonderlic in mind. And once I put it up there, a lot of people decided to take it, and it just became an annual thing from there.
So you said you've never actually seen the real questions on a Wonderlic test, not even, because like I know I've taken a sample Wonderlic test from what I thought was the Wonderlic people from previous years, not the current ones that they're using, obviously, because you can see those things online. So how did you know to make this as close as possible to what they go through? Like you said, how many math ones versus, memorization ones, or versus common sense, hey, figure this out ones, knowledge of the, geographical map, as you ask, from north to south, order these American cities based on geography. You know what I mean? How did you know how many of each of those kind of things to do if you actually didn't see one of their tests?
Yeah, what I meant to say, Bob, was that I didn't see it. I don't think I've ever seen an actual Wonderlic that was taken by the NFL prospect, okay? I'm assuming there's different Wonderlic tests for different businesses, for example, that would order it. I mean, you're not going to have one Wonderlic that's issued by the company for every single business or every single entity that requests it. So I would think that the NFL Combine draft prospect Wonderlic is different than, let's say, maybe the one they would want to throw at IBM employees or something. So that's what I mean, is I've never actually seen one that said, okay, this is the one that the NFL guy is taking in 2013 or 2014. But I have used the Wonderlic.com. I want to say it's .com, but Wonderlic's sample tests as research for the types of questions that I want to ask.
All right. So I took this thing and I got an 80%, Dennis Manilov. Jim Kushler.
That's really good.
And Jim Kushlin took it and got a 75. Now, I don't know how that translates, because in the actual NFL Wonderlic test that they give these kids who are going into the NFL, they got to do all 50 questions, and then it's just a straight number of questions, correct, right? That's how
yeah,
they score
they,
them?
They, Exactly, yes.
Okay, and what's an average score? Do you know, have you researched that? Like, what the, I mean, I know that we've heard some highlights and lowlights. You know, Vince Young, I think, famously got like an 8 or a 9 or some single-digit number on his, and people thought, oh, man, that's just, you know, a serious red flag. And maybe that turned out to be part of the problem why he didn't have an NFL career to speak of. You know, other you know, quarterbacks and some punters and kickers have gotten up in the high 40s, you know, gotten almost everything right. Do you know what the average is?
I honestly don't, Bob, and I've looked around for it. It's not like it's readily available to the public, that the NFL, in fact, I don't even think they want these guys to have their scores out in public. And that's why, you know, it has to be leaked in order for it to get into the public domain. It's not like the Combine releases a list of Wunderlich scores. I've never seen it. Maybe one of your listeners has. Unlike,
well, usually they leak. Yeah, usually an individual right. score will leak. Like I said, but when we found out about Vince Young, somebody will say that. But I wondered if the Wunderlich people or the Combine people who run the thing don't mind giving out, because I thought I'd seen something like that, an average quarterback gets, an average lineman gets, and so on and so forth. You can kind of see that, you know, GMs and scouts are looking for certain scores or certain aptitudes, you know, based on their positions. And that's why I just wondered how, you know, how useful these tools really are toward determining whether somebody is mentally strong enough to be able to play the game.
Well, I think they're interesting. I mean, they're just part of the equation. I mean, I don't think you should ever, you know, red flag a prospect strictly because of his Wunderlich, just because I don't know that you should automatically red flag a prospect because of one particular drill that he does on the field. But yeah, as far as I know, there's not a list of how each guy scored each year. But generally, from what I've been able to gather, the offensive linemen and the quarterbacks score well. And, you know, I don't know who doesn't score well, but I know that the offensive linemen and the quarterbacks are known to be pretty sharp on these types of deals.
Yeah, which they kind of have to be, given their positions and given their changing responsibilities every play at the line of scrimmage based on what they see in front of them. People think that the big uglies, you know, in the trenches, are just big, dumb, thick jocks. And the fact of the matter is they have to be some of the smartest guys on the field, because everything that is done behind them is dependent upon their ability to recognize what is in front of them. And they've got to be able to think on the fly and communicate that and recognize, the defensive alignment and to block a certain way accordingly, and whether stunts are done and those kinds of things. So you can see why it would be important for offensive linemen to do well on something like that. Jim Cushlin took the test too, D-Man. He's got a question.
You know, and I've always wondered this, and I probably asked something similar to this whenever this subject comes up, which is about this time every year. From your experience, Dennis, it may just depend on the player, but is more weight put on this or the old school 40 time?
Well, to me, it's got to be the athleticism. I mean, you know, you can have a great brain, but if you're not an athlete and you can't put up the 40 times or the strength numbers or anything like that, it's not going to matter how smart you are. Conversely, you know, you can be a superstar athlete and not necessarily have a great mind. Or great IQ or whatnot, and you can still be salvageable, because I don't think there's certain positions out there on the football field that don't require Mensa. You know what I mean? So I would think that the one that you have to have first and foremost is the physical skills. Now, you come right back at me, the most famous example, you know, Tom Brady, as far as not, you know, dominating anybody's stopwatches or strength training at the combine, and yet look at how he turned out. So you don't always have to have the physical stuff, but I would think that has to be prioritized.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about it. There's got to be a blend between the two, though. I mean, if you could have all the physical skills in the world, a la a Vince Young, but if you can't read defense just because your mind works a different way than what is required there, and maybe that's what they're trying to measure on a Wonderlic test, for example, then your physicality and your exceptional talent are going to be offset by that. And I think that's why they continue to make this a part of this. Yes.
Bob, let me jump in on one thing, too. I didn't have much of an athletic career, but I'll tell you what. When I was out there on the field, I was what I considered to be, and I'll be harsh on myself, I was dumb on the field. You know, it was really ridiculous because I kind of excelled in the classroom. I did pretty well academically throughout my life. But when I got on the field, for some reason, I couldn't process it the way I needed to, what you just said.
Right.
And it's a fascinating dynamic because I've known other, you know, and I'm not saying that I'm smart, but I had good grades, okay? I had good scores and whatnot. I've known other people who excelled in school who got out on the field and didn't have the sense of what they needed to do and didn't process the information fast enough. And I've known other guys who, you know, didn't have the great grades, but you put them on a field and they're the smartest person there is. You know, because of, and that's why we call, you know, we talk about sports IQ, you know, football IQ, basketball IQ. That's not a cliche. I truly believe in that. I think there's a separate IQ. There's the one that you have in the classroom and there's the one that you have on the court or on the field. And you see it with a lot of guys, in my opinion, on both sides of it.
Yeah, I think you're 100% right, Dennis. There's no question about it. Really good personalized analysis there, too, and I appreciate that. It'd be interesting to see, you know, how these things play out once the combine gets going. Dennis, real quick, since we got you here and talking about the NFL and talking about the combine and positions and so on and so forth, where are you right now, given you, because I think you had been advocating for Kirk Cousins, maybe a guy the Browns should try to throw a big number to. Not going to get a chance to do that. He has been franchise tagged for the second straight offseason by the Washington Redskins. So where are you on the Browns finding a quarterback? Do they need to, either with 1 or 12, take one of the top three guys, Kaiser, Trubisky, or Watson? Or are you in the, hey, let's go throw one of those picks at Bill Belichick and get Jimmy Garoppolo and make him the guy? What's your thought process now, and what do you think they're going to do?
Well, first of all, nobody's happier about Cousins and the Redskins than Jimmy Garoppolo. Like, okay, or the Patriots for that matter. They're like, oh, great, that's one off the market. That can inflate Garoppolo's value that much more, and we can get people scrambling to come to us with hat in hand. You know, it's a fascinating dynamic with the Browns, Bob, because we know they're early in a build, and Hugh Jackson was, you know, told, hey, you're going to have the time to build this, because we don't call it rebuild because they're not rebuilding from anything. But, you know, it's a build. It's going to take time. Okay, that sounds great, but now you've gone 1-15. In that second year, if you're Hugh Jackson, can you really expect to keep your job if you go 1-15 or 2-14 or even 3-13 again? And I don't know that there's a guarantee. Even if you get the verbal assurance from Jimmy Haslam, based on what Haslam's done in the past, I don't know that he sits there for 2 years and tolerates a combined total of 3 or 4 victories. So, with that in mind, does Hugh Jackson want to take on a draft quarterback who, by most accounts, is going to take a lot of work to get NFL ready? You know, because this class is not blessed with, you know, the Andrew Luck type or the Jameis Winston or the Marcus Mariota. By most accounts. So, it seems to me like if you took one of the guys in this draft, you would have to expect to take your lumps again in 2017 on the win-loss column, and I don't know if Jackson has that time. So, my sense is they're going to look to Garoppolo very, very hard now, especially with Cousins out of the mix, and if Jackson likes Garoppolo and thinks he's the guy, then I would think they'll do anything short of giving, you know, Belichick the number one overall pick to get him.
Is Garoppolo the guy?
That's a great question. I don't know, Bob. You know football. I don't know that you know it. You know, we've got such a limited NFL sample from Garoppolo. He looked pretty good in his little stint before he got hurt, you know, in the Brady suspension situation at the beginning of this past year. But we don't know. And, you know, how's he going to look in the Central? I mean, in the AFC North, he's not exceptionally big. He doesn't seem to have the superpower arm. So is that going to play in the AFC North? I don't know. And, you know, that is a fascinating question. But it, to me, it all comes down to whether Jackson believes in him or not. I mean, if Jackson believes in him, if you're the Browns, you have to get him. Because why did you bring Hugh Jackson in? You know, you didn't bring him in to twiddle his thumbs. You brought him in to, you know, formulate a quarterback first and foremost. So if he likes Garoppolo and thinks that the skill set is there, then they're going to get him.
If he likes him, but the price is too high from Belichick, or if he just doesn't like him as much as perhaps he needs to make this thing happen, and they are forced to go the college route, which of the three guys do you think would fit best? Which of the three guys do you think Hugh Jackson would like best?
Well, my sense is that Hugh Jackson would gravitate toward Deshaun Watson because Watson is a winner, was such a winner in college, and has such a resume. You know, it's almost impossible.
Dabo Swinney calls him Michael Jordan. Said the Browns would be passing up on Jordan if they do that. Now he's his college coach, and of course he's biased, but he is saying no. This is not just some college program quarterback where his skills are great for the college game, but not for the program. He is insistent that this guy is the real deal.
Well, and you know, part of that's Dabo being Dabo, as you know, he's a great salesman that he is. But
sure,
you know, I'd listen to what Dabo says. I mean, the guy won a national title. You know, so Dabo's a great coach, and you know, I'm sure that there will be plenty of teams talking to Swinney about Watson. But my sense is that Jackson would, you know, he always talks about what's on the tape. Well, Deshaun Watson has a ton of tape and a ton of good tape. So, and it's very possible too that Jackson says, you know what, I'm the quarterback whisperer. I'm the guy who knows how to fix people. I can fix the mechanical flaws of Deshaun Watson. I mean, don't sell Jackson's ego short in that regard. And I'm saying the ego in a positive way here. You know, he has a ton of confidence in his abilities to, quote, coach him up. He may look at Watson and say, okay, I see the flaws and I think I can fix them in relatively short time. So out of those three, the Kaiser, Trubisky, Watson trio, I would say he would lean toward Watson first and then probably Kaiser second because of the physical skills, and then Trubisky third.
Now, when you say this is what you think he would do, is it because it's what you would do, or do you have a different take on what you just described from what Jackson would do?
No, I'm saying what I said based on what I guess, that my educated guess that about what Jackson would do. Based on what he said in the past about quarterbacks and what he says he likes and various evidence to that regard. But as far as what I would do, is it that much different? I've said all along I love Watson. I love watching the guy play, and I know there are mechanical issues, and yes, he, you know, has accuracy issues, and he's not, you know, a perfect specimen by any stretch, but I am wowed by some of what I saw. And, you know, he put up numbers against Alabama that nobody else has in back-to-back games. So that's really, I'm going to say, good enough for me, but it's a definite eye-opener if your eyes weren't open already. So I would probably lean toward trying to get Watson in here. I wouldn't go number one overall with Watson, though, because I do recognize the – he is not, you know, NFL ready,
right,
based on what these, you know, scouts have said. And I trust a lot of these scouts. I mean, almost unanimous, the scouts say, this is not a number one overall draft pick quarterback. But that doesn't mean he can't be a productive player once he gets into summer
right,
camp.
Right, once the time becomes right for him. That's exactly right. Dennis, rapid fire here just at the end. Adrian Peterson, option not picked up by the Vikings, is an unrestricted free agent. Give me a landing spot.
Oakland. I just throw that out there. Sorry, I maybe they're set or not, but I'll say Oakland.
Okay, I say Detroit only because the Lions are desperate for a running game. You know, Matthew Stafford.
I like really that better.
Yeah, like and it's in division, too. You know, you sign him from your opponent there. You weaken your opponent while you make yourself better at the same time. Tony Romo, landing spot.
Houston, Texas.
Wow, staying in Texas, even though they just paid Osweiler all that money to then what, sit there and back up Romo?
You know why? Because every defensive player on the Houston, Texas is storming the Houston, Texas front office and coaching staff and demanding a meeting and saying, if you don't bring in a guy the likes of Tony Romo, we're not coming after the quarterback next year.
You don't think, though, that John Elway, having already gone after one kind of injured guy toward the tail end of his career to win a Super Bowl, would do the same thing again? Because I'll tell you what, I think they're that good, and I think they could do it again if Tony Romo is able to stay upright.
Totally agree with you, Bob. It's a question of where does Romo want to go? At that point, then it becomes, all right, where does Romo go? I don't think he wants to necessarily have to travel to Denver and leave his family, if you will. I think it's a lot easier for him with Houston.
Steelers paid 4 years, $68 million to Antonio Brown. Did they pay too much?
No. Even with all the Facebook fiasco that he created and everything else, he's a tremendously productive player. And no, I don't think they did.
Scale of 1 to 10, how much did Lady Gaga's halftime performance have to do with the Falcons' collapse in the Super Bowl?
Negative zero.
Manu, that's not that's not what you get from Mohamed Sanu. Mohamed Sanu said that the halftime being like an hour long really made them rusty. It was like a workout, and then you get cold, and you got to go back and play, and we weren't ready to play. Apparently, they let the Patriots back onto the field a half an hour before that because he's blaming the halftime show for how they blew that lead in the second half. Kid you not, that was on NFL Network's Good Morning Football. I figured I'd run that past you just for a good time. Dennis Mandeloff, great conversation, my friend. Thank you for the time. Great work with the Wunderlich test, too. I enjoyed it, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Bob.
You got it. There you go. Dennis Mandeloff joining us. Top of the hour now. SportsCenter coming your way right here on ESPN 106.5.
LeBron thought about the three. Now sends it. And gets it.
Carry against Dillavidella. Looking for Antetokounmpo.
See a pass to LeBron! LeBron James looking for the end one.
Gary
inside. Ooh. He snuck it in.
Derek Williams, a long launch.
Derek Williams dialing long distance to the 9-1-1 call, and the Cavaliers lead by 4 after 3.
When you're playing against a divisional team, it's going to be a tough game. Grind it out. Milwaukee's a young, great team. We always enjoy going against them. It's great competition. But going into the fourth, we closed out, got stops when we needed. Our potential is kind of through the roof right now because we can form so many lineups. So it's exciting. We just still got to get used to one another, what to expect, and the trust factor. And once we get that down, I feel like going into the playoffs, we'll be in a good spot.
What does Darren bring?
Automatic leadership. He's ran a franchise, multiple franchises before, so you know he knows how to run a ball club. Playing in big games before, so you know he won't shy away from the moment. He can knock down shots and he can play make. I've played with him a couple times. Now I've seen international play, so it's going to help out a lot.
At the end of the day, I just felt like this was the best fit for me. You know, it was a team that showed interest in the offseason of signing me. I know a lot of the guys on this team, you know, playing with Bron in the Olympics, play with Kyle, and he's one of my good friends, and we still talk to this day. I just felt like I'd be comfortable here. I felt like I would have a significant role here, you know, with the need for a backup behind Kyrie. And, of course, competing for a championship, you know, that's something that, you know, I haven't had a chance to do. Definitely helped the pick-and-roll game here, you know, being able to distribute but also score as well and kind of take some pressure off of Bron having to handle the ball, you know, so much in that second unit.
I've always thought, you know what, put on pads. Remember Chuck Knoll, he was forced to do a mini combine. So he's like, fine, but here's what we're doing. Everybody has to have pads on. And all the DBs and wide receivers had to have their socks rolled down when they walked down the hill because if you weren't taped, go back up and get taped. You had to be dressed as if we're going to play. We ran our 40-yard dash on grass. And I really think if you're going to do all these drills, put pads on. Or do this. Just go to the Olympic trials. Whoever doesn't make the Olympics, bring them on your football team. Because, I mean, if that's how you're evaluating who's a football player, which anybody that does that, is moronic. This is not a football event. It's an athletic event.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Rolling on, we are. Thanks for being with us this afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. So many different issues to get into in this final hour of the program, and I want you to be a part of it at your leisure. 866-240-1065 is the number, 866-240-1065. I want to talk about this Shaquille O'Neal, JaVale McGee story. You've heard probably a little bit about it, maybe a lot about it, depending on how much you listen right here to ESPN 106.5 The Ticket on some of the national shows. But you hear a lot of people talking about Shaquille O'Neal bullying JaVale McGee. Well, not really. Not really Shaquille O'Neal doing that, but that's what JaVale McGee's mom has declared, that Shaquille O'Neal is bullying her son, and he should be fired because of it. I'm sorry, but I got to go into this just a little bit. First of all, a little backdrop on the story. If you don't know, if you don't watch Shaq's feature, which is called Shaqed and a Fool, which is part of the TNT program that he's on, it's a comedy. It's what it is. It's what it's supposed to be. It's a comedy. It's a joke. It's goofing around. And he just kind of, picks targets. It's kind of like what late-night talk show hosts do. They're going to take shots at presidents most of the time. They're going to take shots at public figures, sometimes actors, sometimes athletes if they do goofy things or whatever the case might be. Most of the time, it's good-natured and fun. And I think it probably started out as good-natured and fun with Shaquille O'Neal and JaVale McGee, the Warrior center. Because Shaq has featured him in a number of different gaffes on the court, and that's what makes it funny. It's like a blooper reel. It's kind of like SportsCenter's Not Top 10. You've seen those. And so that's what Shaq does with Shaq to the Fool. He kind of highlights those things. And the problem is, according to some anyway, the problem is that Shaq has returned to one target more than any other target, and that's McGee. And it went a little bit further than that when Shaq went in on JaVale McGee on social media, calling him a bum ass, and JaVale McGee responding by calling him an old bastard. So it started to get a little bit intense, a little bit nasty perhaps. ESPN reported on Friday that the Warriors had reached out to TNT and to discuss the coverage of JaVale McGee and arguing that this is hurting his reputation to be so repeatedly mocked by Shaquille O'Neal. Steve Kerr and Kevin Durant also came to JaVale McGee's defense, who, by the way, is not, bumbling and stumbling and committing, hilarious gaffes all the time. He's having a pretty decent season. So some of the tweet exchange looks like this. JaVale McGee tweeted on, this would be Friday, I believe, at Shaq, get my, and then there's a picture of a peanut with an apostrophe S, and I'll let you picture that out. There's a peanut emoji. Get my out of your mouth, and EAD, hashtag, that is all. Shaq responded, at JaVale McGee 34, now since you want a good team, you want to act like you a player now. Stop it. You will only be remembered for Shaqed and a Fool. Hashtag bumass. Shaq then follows up. Don't be acting like you a G. I'll smack the S out of you. Or out of your bumass. You the one that's looking stupid with your dumb ass. Hashtag bumass. Again, a lot of ass in here. Sorry for that, but it is what it is. JaVale McGee comes back. This is also going back to Friday. Forget being on a good team. I'm a grown man. You've had those, and he pictured the peanut emoji again, in your mouth for 5-6 years now. You thought I was just going to stay silent? And then finally, all right, y'all, I'm done responding, I think. And then the thinking emoji from JaVale McGee. And that's kind of where this thing left off between the two players. But lo and behold, it isn't over yet, because in comes JaVale McGee's mother. JaVale McGee's mother has dived into this thing full on, as well as Shaquille O'Neal's mom, but in a different way. Shaquille O'Neal's mom said, all right, enough is enough, Shaqy. And I'm wondering how a mom looks at 40-some-year-old Shaquille O'Neal, all 7'3" and 325 pounds of him or whatever he is these days, and grabs him by the ear or smacks his hand and tells him what to do. But Shaq listens to his mama, And he definitely listens to his father, too, his military father. No doubt about that. She said enough's enough. Don't keep doing this. It's, you know, it's gotten old and it's done. But that's not the real story here. The real story here for me is the mom of JaVale McGee, who literally is calling for an intervention by the teacher and a principal and a school board member for this playground fight between her son and another boy. And she wants these authorities to slap down a suspension on the other boy or to kick him out of school for bullying her boy. I know that sounds goofy what I'm saying right now, but how can it be anything other than goofy? That is exactly what she is doing. She is treating this, JaVale McGee's mom, is treating this as if her son is still her, you know, 9-year-old son, not her 29-year-old son. And I don't know exactly how old JaVale McGee is. I want to say he's around 29 years old, somewhere in that neighborhood. But JaVale McGee is obviously a grown man. And his mom is coming to his rescue and demanding that the grown-ups do something about it. And that, to me, is one of the most hilarious and worst things ever. JaVale McGee's mother is furious. Now, this is from TMZ from yesterday. JaVale McGee's mother is furious at Shaquille O'Neal, calling for the Inside the NBA to fire Shaq for blasting her son on TV and social media. It's the latest in the bitter feud with Shaq and McGee that I just laid out for you. Tensions are at all-time high after Shaq went in on McGee again last week on TV and social media. And Pamela McGee said to The Undefeated, which is, of course, a part of the ESPN website, "He cyber-bullied my son. Totally inappropriate. Shaquille needs to lose his job or be suspended. The NBA needs to make a stand." That was right around the time, that's right around the time that Shaquille's mother said, "You need to cut the crap out as well." "I have orders from the top to leave it alone," O'Neal said. "My mama." Shaq said his mother told him, "Stop the silliness, leave him alone," so he listened. But it wasn't Shaq's mama that is getting all of the attention. It is Mama McGee. Mama McGee says that her son has been so hurt by this that the other boy, in this case, Shaquille, needs to be fired. I ask you, and I mean this very seriously, I don't care what you do for a living. I don't care if you work in the entertainment industry like Shaquille O'Neal does on television, or I do on a very limited basis in the radio business. Or if you work in the, the financial sector, maybe you are an accountant. I don't care if you are a line worker, maybe you work at Jeep. I don't care what you do. Can you imagine getting into a dispute with a coworker, another person, and actually having your mama have to come to your rescue at the age of 29? Honestly, and I'm going to tell you something here, and I'm going to make a social comment that you may or may not like, and some people don't like social commentary on sports radio shows, but again, when they tie into sports, I think they're appropriate. This is what we have built. This is what we have built through the last, I don't know, decade or two, where everybody's feelings are the first and foremost concern for everybody involved. Somebody's feelings got hurt, therefore somebody must be made to pay. Somebody's feelings got hurt, therefore somebody must lose their job. Somebody's feelings got hurt, and therefore somebody must pay a price. Somebody must get a paycheck. That's where we are. That's what we've built. Through a politically correct society that says you can't hurt somebody's feelings, you have invaded their safe space, you have violated their emotional well-being by saying something that hurt their feelings. In other words, to hell with the First Amendment, to hell with being a critic, which you're allowed to be in this society, whether you're a basketball critic on TV like Shaquille O'Neal, a movie critic who thinks an actor's performance stunk, a radio and television critic that didn't like a TV show or a pilot, whatever the case might be, you're allowed to be those things, and you're allowed to be critical, which is part of the word. The root word of critical is critic. You're allowed to be critical of performances without being fired for cyberbullying. The idea that a grown man is going to be accused of bullying another man for saying you stink, your move was goofy, your ball you threw out of bounds was stupid, or whatever the case might be. And I don't even watch the Shaq in a full segment very much, so I don't really know exactly how nasty it got. But regardless of how nasty it is, that's life in the big city. You are being paid millions of dollars. And I'm not saying JaVale McGee is paid like Shaq was in his prime. I'm not saying he's being as paid as well as his teammate Kevin Durant or Steph Curry or anybody else. But the fact that he's in the NBA means he is a multimillionaire. You are being paid to play a game, and you're telling me that because a critic, in this case Shaquille O'Neal, one of the greatest centers of all time, is making fun of you, there has to be some sort of redress, some sort of recompense, punitive damages given to you or punitive sanctions taken against him? Well, honest to God, stop it. This is just a personal plea from me to the rest of society. Stop giving everybody ribbons for participating in the game. Stop giving everybody the belief that there is some sort of constitutional right to be applauded for your efforts, even if your efforts stunk. Stop giving the impression that there is a constitutional right to go through your day, your week, your month, your life without being offended. Because there is no such constitutional protection. It doesn't exist. People are allowed to offend you by using their constitutionally protected free speech. They're allowed to offend. That's life in this big city, and if you're JaVale McGee, in this big NBA, and in this big global phenomenon known as the NBA. You are allowed to be offended. You're allowed to be criticized. You are allowed to be mocked. You are allowed to be whatever. And if you have a problem, you can deal with it as you see fit. If you feel as if you're being mocked for things that are not true, well, now you can say, hey, that's a slander suit I've got against you. Or that's a libel suit if somebody writes something about you that is not true. But if he is just giving his opinion, then there's pretty much nothing you can do about it. One thing you can't do is get him suspended. Another thing you can't do is get him fired. And the third thing you most definitely cannot do is go running to Joe Mama and having her fight this battle for you. That cannot be allowed. Get on the phone, call Mom, tell her, Mom, drop it, let it go. I got this. Do not let that happen, or I promise you, the mocking you got from Shaquille O'Neal is going to seem like a walk in the park to considering what everybody else is going to be saying to you. It's just, grow up, people. Grow up. Stop raising snowflakes. Stop raising kids who are just afraid to hear a word that hurts their feelings without running to the teacher and saying, he said something I didn't like. He needs to be suspended. Stop it. Thicker skin, a little bit tougher, would do us all well, especially if you're going to be in the public limelight of the National Basketball Association. All right. If you got thoughts on it, let's take them at 866-240-1065. Do we want to do calls? Yeah, let me get Tony in Perrysburg in because he's waiting, and I don't want to make him wait before for the bottom of the hour Sports Center. Then I'm going to give you something cool, and then we'll take more of your calls on the other side of Sports Center. Tony, you're up now, though, on ESPN 1065. The ticket, go ahead.
Hey, Bob, this is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. This is hilarious.
Mama's coming to the rescue.
The sad part is you hit the nail on the head with this generation. I actually work with some HR people, and they're telling me more and more lately they're getting phone calls from grown people's parents complaining about how their children are being treated at work, and it cracks me up.
Oh, my God. And, you know, I mean, and it's the age of helicopter parenting is what it is. These parents are just kind of, you know, hovering around their kids and making sure that nobody does anything that might harm them, affect them negatively, or whatever the case might be, or else they want blood, and they don't even know how to let go once the kids become adults.
Well, you hit the nail on the head, because when I get home, I do plan on following Mr. McGee and ridiculing him a little bit for his mom fighting his battles for him.
And to my knowledge, he hasn't
told her to stop. She opened the floodgates.
That's exactly what
he did. Bullied now. Oh, just wait till the rest of the country gets a hold of him. It's hilarious.
Oh, my God, yeah. I mean, seriously. I mean, you know, one of the worst things, I don't know how old you are, but growing up, one of the worst things that I think most boys could be called is a mama's boy. A mama's boy has got to have mommy fight his battles for him, right? Well, guess what?
Oh,
dude's 29
you.
Years old, and he's a mama's boy in the National Basketball Association, unless he does something about it. That is just pathetic. It really, truly is.
It's pathetic, but it did bring a smile to my face only because it's such a good example of of what's going on with the young people today.
That's right. It's hilarious. A commentary of the modern times, of millennials, the millennial generation. It's a very strong commentary on them. Tony, great call, my friend. I appreciate you getting in. You got it. I wanted to get you in before the bottom so you didn't have to sit through the Sports Center before getting on the air. But I also want to do something cool for you, as I mentioned, on the way to that Sports Center. If you watch the Impractical Jokers, it's just called Impractical Jokers, on True TV, I absolutely love the show. The four guys are hilarious. They're coming to Toledo, to the Toledo Zoo, on July 6th. All right, you can win a pair of tickets to the Impractical Jokers at the zoo July 6th. It's a Beat the Box Office contest because the tickets do go on sale this Friday at 10 a.m. All right, so you can beat the box office right now by calling 866-240-1065. Caller number 8, those tickets are going to be yours. A pair of tickets to see Impractical Jokers at the zoo on July 6th. You are going to love it. It's a great time. And if you're not already watching that show, you really should be. 866-240-1065. Those tickets are yours if you're caller number 8. Back right
866-240-1065. Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza on 1065 The Ticket.
Back indeed. Thanks so much for being with us right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. I was just watching a really, really cool video. It popped up on one of the Twitter feed, on one of the sites that we follow, or one of the tweeters that we follow. Bigplay.com, I think is what it is. You gotta watch it. If you're on Twitter, check it out. It's just very cool. There's a great cell phone video of a corner three-point shot in yesterday's Cavaliers-Bucks game, I think it was by Derek Williams. And the person taking the video from their seat has, obviously, in the picture, the people in front of him, you know, in their seats all the way down to where the court is. And there's a fan about three or four rows in front of the individual with the video camera who essentially is taking the shot for Derek Williams. I can't describe it any better than that, other than as Williams rises, so does this fan. It looks like a female, just, you know, from the back. So does the fan. And she goes up, and literally they put it in slow motion, which is what made it really cool. The video's in slow motion. Literally, as Williams' elbow raises and he starts his release and his follow through and the flick of the wrist, the fans is doing the exact same thing at the exact same time. And then in slow motion, you see the splash, and the fans' slow motion, you know, reaction is two fists going up in the air as if she had just made the shot. It is just so cool. I can't say it any other way. It's just so cool to see a fan like that, like we all are, living their dream vicariously and almost physically channeling their heroes on the court or on the field or whatever the case might be. And I use the heroes in the word heroes in the sense of sports, obviously. I don't want to hear anything from people talking about the only heroes are military heroes. Believe me, nobody knows that more than I do. I'm a huge, huge supporter of the military. Always have been my entire career. People sometimes get into that notion. But when I say heroes, I mean people love sports. And they're sports heroes. They just live through them sometimes. And it's just a great video. Check it out. It's on the Twitter feed for 106.5. I'm sorry, for Sports Radio 106.5. Twitter feed is Sports Radio 106.5. Facebook feed is 106.5 The Ticket. Okay, we're talking about moms, and we're talking about dads, and we're talking about, in the last segment, Pamela McGee, the mother of JaVale McGee, coming to fight her son's battles in the battle with Shaquille O'Neal. Now I want to talk a little bit about LeVar Ball. LeVar Ball is the father of the outstanding All-American at UCLA, Lonzo Ball. Also the father of a high school kid named LaMelo Ball. No pressure there. We're naming you after LeBron James and Carmelo Anthony, it would appear. By the way, LaMelo is his name. He scored 92 points in a game. He's got three kids. He's got three of them. And if you haven't been following the story, well, You've probably heard something similar to it before, in the form of Richard Williams, Earl Woods, and Marv Marinovich. Now, just the backstory of that for some younger fans and listeners. Richard Williams is the father, or was the father, of Venus and Serena Williams. I believe he's deceased, if memory serves. I think Richard Williams has passed away. I know Earl Woods certainly has, and you know that's the Tiger's father. And then Marv Marinovich, you may or may not remember, is the father of former USC standout quarterback and then short-term Oakland Raider, Todd Marinovich. These parents, these dads particularly, were extraordinarily overbearing on their kids. And they made predictions from very young ages that their kids were going to just be, you know, sports gods, if I may. And I'll do that, G-A-W-D, gods. Richard Williams said that his daughters, Serena and Venus, technically Venus and Serena since Venus is older, back when they were like 11 and 9 or 12 and 10 or something stupid, very young, had these girls from the, you know, I think it was from Compton. Aren't they from Compton, California? From, you know, the very, very poor urban area of South Central Los Angeles. Said that my girls are going to win all of the Grand Slam events. Because they're going to be that good. And, you know, people are like, oh, my God, this is one of these dads who's going to ruin his girls. They're going to burn them out at a very young age. He's making them practice so much, et cetera, et cetera. And making all of these lofty predictions, putting too much pressure on them. How did it work out? Well, Serena Williams has won more Grand Slam events than any woman in the modern era. Sister Venus hasn't been as successful as Serena, but she still has a handful of her own Grand Slams, five or six or seven or something like that. They have been exactly what Richard Williams predicted they would be, and they have done so with class. They've done so for the most part. I mean, there have been very few handful of events where things have been said and maybe attitudes have been on display, that sort of thing. But by and large, over the last 15, 20 years, honestly, Venus and Serena Williams have been just pure class, winning championships just like Dad predicted, and taking the tennis world by storm and just making it their own. Earl Woods, when Tiger Eldrick Woods was 2 years old or 3 years old, and he was on Johnny Carson putting to show how great a great golfer he was at 2 or 3 years old. He's some sort of prodigy. Earl Woods once famously predicted that as a tremendously talented golf playing son would grow up to change the world. Not just be one of the greatest golfers ever, but to help change the world. You know, like as in the, you know, in the mold of Gandhi or in the mold of God or in the mold of Lord knows what. And that was a little bit lofty. Now, as it turns out, all of Earl Woods' driving force behind Tiger Woods to practice and play, et cetera, and to focus, worked. He didn't change the world. Changed his family's world when he got caught cheating on his wife a whole bunch of different times. We know the story there. But the lessons and the discipline and everything that Earl Woods put his kid through turned into 14 major championships, second most in the history of the sport. And had his back not gone bad and his knee gone bad and everything else, who knows if Tiger Woods would be chasing Jack Nicklaus and those 18. I don't think it's even a realistic possibility anymore. But he has been everything that Earl Woods said he would be, at least on the golf course. And then there's Marv Marinovich. Marv was the father of Todd Marinovich. Marv, if you've ever seen that 30 for 30 special, and again, I'm speaking specifically right now to younger listeners. If you're 35 or older, probably you know Marv Marinovich and Todd Marinovich's story right now, so I hate to be telling you stuff you already know, but for the younger people, bear with me. Todd was raised from literally the crib to be an NFL quarterback. His father decided at a very young age he was going to make his son, almost like as if he was born in a test tube, he's going to create an NFL quarterback. That's essentially what this was. He started him out in life at working out. He started him out in life making sure that he ate only nutritious things. It was famously noted, or infamously, that Todd Marinovich had never even had a hamburger from McDonald's until he went to college. He had just been so meticulously designed and driven, et cetera, with one goal in mind, whether it was his goal or not, it was Dad's. And Dad said, this is what he's going to be. And the way the story turned out, very different from the Williams and the Woods stories. Todd Marinovich, when he got to college and finally out from under the watchful eye and the heavy thumb of his father, went off the rails. Finally given freedom, he got into drugs, got into marijuana, had some trouble, I think alcohol as well, ended up going into the NFL, could not stay off the drugs there as well. You know, it's like, you wouldn't even let me have a hamburger, well, how about this? That kind of a thing is the way the story goes. He really rebelled against his father. His father would make him go to football practice, and if he didn't think he practiced well enough, he would make him run home. And we're not talking around the block. We're talking several miles. It would be dark. The kid will have already had a full football practice and a workout, and now he's got to run home with his dad driving slowly behind him with headlights on him, making sure he doesn't stop. He wrecked the kid's life by putting so much pressure on him. Venus and Serena were mentally strong enough to not crack under the immense pressure put on by Dad, and they turned out tremendously successful in virtually all ways. Tiger embraced, I think, the discipline and the pressure put on by Dad and used it to drive him to, you know, the tremendous heights that he achieved. Todd Marinovich cracked under that pressure, which brings us back to LeVar Ball. LeVar Ball, that's the dad's name, declared that his son Lonzo, who's a freshman at UCLA, is better than Steph Curry, not in the future, but right now. Put him on the Warriors and the Warriors are better, he said. Put Steph Curry at UCLA, he wouldn't be any better than Lonzo would be. That's what LeVar Ball said. That was the first eye-opening statement that came about a week and a half ago from LeVar Ball. Now, Lonzo Ball is tremendous. I heard this morning with Mike and Mike, former Duke star and NBA point guard before he was injured terribly and had his career ended, Jay Williams. Jay Williams described Lonzo Ball as being the next Jason Kidd. That's a Hall of Famer if you're scoring at home. The next Jason Kidd, a pass-first point guard with unbridled athleticism, quickness, court sense, leadership, and a tremendously good shot, even though it's a goofy-looking shot. He's got a strange outside set shot where he shoots it from the left side of his body instead of from the right side. He's right-handed. But he's a very good shooter as well. That's just one of three sons that LeVar Ball has that he is putting pressure on them to. He said all three of them, by the way, will be one-and-dones in college. One-and-dones. That is pressure in and of itself. Because now it's telling a kid, even if you have a mediocre experience as a freshman at UCLA, you've got to get out of there because that's what I've decided you are. Taking it a step further, LeVar Ball has declared that his son, when he goes into the NBA, will only play for the Los Angeles Lakers. He's an LA boy. He goes to UCLA. He wants to stay in LA with the Lakers, and that's the only place he'll play. Somebody must have gotten in LeVar Ball's ear because he said then, backtracking a little bit, that it doesn't have to be. His son wants to play in the NBA, but he would prefer to be a Laker. And, of course, somebody must have gotten in his ear and said, do you realize you are scaring away anybody who wants to draft him in the top two or three if it isn't the Lakers? Do you realize that? Because, A, they're not going to want to take somebody that doesn't want to be where they are, and they might not be able to sign. B, even if they do sign him, they know as soon as he gets out of his rookie contract, he's going to bolt as a free agent for the Lakers. What are you doing? So he tried to walk that back a little bit. But it still wasn't far enough. The next thing we got from LeVar Ball was Pops saying that Lonzo Ball is going to be the first player drafted that isn't looking for the Under Armour or the Nike or the Adidas contract. Because the heck with them. He's going to be the first player ever drafted with his own brand. That's right, his own brand. Apparently he is designing his own brand and clothing line, et cetera, is Pops for his son, called Big Baller, Big Baller Brand. Quote, they're kicking in the door, but they're shocked at what I'm telling them. I said, I'm not looking for no endorsement deal. I'm looking for a marketing and distribution deal, branding. The only person doing that is Michael Jordan with Nike. That's what we're for. If Lonzo doesn't sign with Adidas, Nike, or Under Armour, guess what? I'll sign the Big Baller Brand. We already got our own brand, Triple B's. Lonzo is going to be the first one drafted with his own brand. That don't happen. Now, it's already an active apparel company, according to USA Today. So he might be right about that. But once again, here is a guy, a father of a young athlete, who is essentially saying, my son is better than Curry, the two-time MVP, now. And, oh, by the way, he's on par with Jordan. The only guy doing what we're doing with him is Jordan. Nobody else is good enough to do that. And he's going to be one and done. And what he's going to be is he's going to be toxic. That's what he's going to be. He's going to be toxic. Because no general manager, no public relations director, media relations director for any franchise is going to want to deal with that dad being in the room for negotiations, being a pain in the butt on local radio and television and newspaper. I mean, this guy is going to scare away teams. Now, somebody told him that, too. And he responded and addressed it, saying, no, that's not the truth. Quote, here's the thing right here. I know what my son's about. He knows what I'm about. Now, all these people saying, oh, LeVar needs to shut up and just let his son play. No, you shut up and let my son just play. I'm going to say whatever I want to say, and I've been like this all my life. Everybody expects this right now, Keyshawn, for me to back up. They can go and do what they do. I'm not backing up. I've been in my son's life all this time. He would be thinking differently if I didn't say anything. So how about Pops? Why is that music playing? We're not done. Don't tell me we're done. I thought I had another 3 or 4 minutes here to finish my thoughts on this. How about Pops? I guess I am done. The music is playing. Would you want your team to draft this kid with the Jason Kidd-like skills, but the dad who is an absolute nightmare? And do you think he's going to wreck his kid like Marinovich or drive his kid to extraordinary heights like Richard Williams and Earl Woods did? That's kind of the question there. It's a question maybe we can talk to parents about tomorrow. If you've got a young athlete, how do you see that story playing out? How do you handle your own kids' successes? That's where I've got to leave it now, because once again, the music is playing. Congratulations to Dan Potts of Napoleon. He is going to see the Impractical Jokers at the Toledo Zoo on July 6th. Good job. Well done. We'll give you another shot at those tomorrow, as well as, again, an opportunity to talk about all of this fun stuff on the next extravaganza. Tomorrow afternoon at 3 o'clock, stay where you are. Drive Time is next right here on The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.